Okay, good morning. Let's get started. Great to see so many people in the morning. I know for IT people at least it's still early. So we already heard a bit about ALP in the previous talk, and I will now talk about ALP and SLinux 1 year later, because this is based on a talk that we had already 1 year ago. Quick introduction, my name is Johannes Segitz. I'm a security engineer working here at SUSE in the Nuremberg office, although I'm mostly in the home office. I do code review, although realistically not that much anymore nowadays. I do product pen testing, so I look at our products and also the OpenSUSE products from an offensive point of view before we ship them. I'm an SLinux expert, and I'm also the lead of the engineering red team, so there we do internal attack simulation against the network in the hopes that we find stuff before other people tell us. And a quick disclaimer, you've also seen it on the title, so I used the old name. The reason is rather simple. I submitted a talk with the title, so I can't willy-nilly change it. Also, I kind of lost track of the names. I think now SLFO is kind of the hopefully long-term name, but who knows? Good. What will we cover today? I will give you a very quick introduction into the product security team that works at SUSE. Then I will give you a really quick SLinux refresher, and then I will tell you about our work on SLinux and ALP, what worked well, what are the challenges that we've seen, and also what we expect to do in the future. And quick disclaimer, if you've been at the SUSE Labs conference or at the Berlin summit last week, feel free to go out into the sun, because that's basically the same content here. Okay. The SUSE product security team. The important part here really is the product part, because by now we have a couple of security teams within the company. There's a cybersecurity team, there's a dedicated team for certifications. We do product security. So for SUSE and OpenSUSE, really the products that we ship, we have a look there. We are split up into groups because by now we are a pretty big team. We have a reactive security side, and that's the classical incident handling that you all know. A CVE is discovered, we learn about it either through public channels or through private channels. We have a couple of those where we get pre-notified, especially if something is more severe. And then we analyze, are we affected, what do we need to do to fix it, and then finally we ship a patch sooner or later. We do that for SUSE, but we also do it for OpenSUSE, and the OpenSUSE part definitely increases our scope quite a bit, because the package selection is just quite a bit bigger. Then proactive security, this is all of the security work that we do before shipment. So hardening, code review, all of these things. There, of course, we can only go so far because we can't harden the system until it's not usable anymore. It's still a general purpose operating system, and we need to find a good balance there. But the main goal here is to make sure that if a security vulnerability is discovered sooner or later, that we are then hopefully either not affected or the severity is just lower for us. And in general, it's a really fun place to work, unless someone discovers a backdoor in SSH just before the Easter holidays. That sucks. If you find something like that, report it on Monday. Well, 5-day work week, enough time for us. Not on Thursday before Easter. Not great. And especially for the reactive people at the moment, the kernel team issues very, very many CVEs now. And this is quite painful for us, because we have to analyze all of those and need to ship them, because as soon as something gets a CVE, it needs to be fixed. So we can't just say, well, these 200 we don't do. Well, it's not only the reactive team that suffers because of that, it's also the kernel team and probably many other parts of the company, and we are currently evaluating what we can do about this. So why do we do that? So why do we change from UpArmor to SLinux? And especially in this group, this might be relevant here, because UpArmor has been a cornerstone in the OpenSUSE community for quite a while. Both systems definitely are good mandatory access control systems. It's not like UpArmor is bad. It's just that we've seen that SLinux has seen a lot more traction in the last couple of years, and we expect this to continue. And we therefore decided to switch to SLinux because of its capabilities and its promising future. You can see it here. that Android, for example, is using as a Linux by default. So everyone that has an Android mobile in your pocket, you are an SL Linux user, and you likely never noticed unless you try to root your phone, because rooting your phone became more difficult because of SL Linux, as it should be with a security solution. Especially in high security environments, SL Linux just offers more. Well, you can do certain things in SL Linux that you either can't do in UpArmor or where you would really struggle with UpArmor. For most people, that's not that relevant, but of course, we on the SUSE side have customers that have these requirements, so for us, it makes sense to switch there. And also, we have a very good coverage in the policy that we ship. So we have, I think, 440 modules, something like that, in the SL Linux policy, and if you compare that to the number of UpArmor defaults, UpArmor profiles that we ship by default, this is definitely a much broader coverage. So, let's do a really quick SL Linux refresher. This will not teach you SL Linux, but just if you never really worked with SL Linux, this should give you the absolute basics. SL Linux relies on type enforcement. Every object on a system has a user, a role, a type, a sensitivity, and a category assigned. And if you then put this all together, then you get this nice colorful string here, and that's the so-called security context. And access control decisions are done from one security context to another security context. But the good news, especially in the beginning, is you can ignore everything apart from the type. So that's the part that has the suffix underscore T, because most of the access control is decided just upon the type. So if you see that long string, just ignore everything, look at the type, and then you're probably good to go. And these types also usually should have a pretty good correspondence between what you see here and the type of object you're looking at. So if you're looking at postfix and the type is kernel T, then something went wrong. So let's jump into what actually worked well. So we improved our processes, and I think the biggest part here is that it's not just my side project anymore, as it used to be for quite a while. By now we have a full-time policy maintainer that works on the policy, and she's sitting there. Then we now have regular meetings on Monday. Until now, this is only people that really actively work on that stuff within the company, but we are open this up for community members if there's interest. And there we sync up with interested parties. For example, for a while we had people also from other parts of SUSE in there because it was relevant for them, because we know that what we do has impact on other systems. We now have improved JIT-based workflow, and we use the Fedora policy as upstream. There are two big SL Linux policies out there, I would say. There's the so-called reference policy, which was the attempt to create a universal policy that can be used as a basis for policies by distributions. And then Fedora forked this, basically, and had a really huge patch for a while, and by now it's basically their own policy that they have. And we experimented with both and decided the Fedora policy is better suitable for us, so by now they are our upstream. And then we have individual branches for the different products, code streams, where we moved all of the various patches that we had previously directly in the packaging. And that makes the packaging now rather easy, because you do your work in the JIT tree, and then the packaging step by now is just running a command and checking that in. We also stole something from Microsoft, so we have an SL Linux patch day. The reason is that the upstream policy does not really have regular releases or something where we could hook into and say this would be a logical point. And we don't want to go too far away so that we have too much breakage if we then only do it once a year. So once a month, we sync up with upstream and then try to figure out all of the problems before you find it. What is also a massive improvement for us is that the knowledge for SL Linux within SUSE improved a lot. So we get much better bug reports than we got them 2 years ago. because by now most people know what SELinux is and they also know where to look. And that causes us to have way fewer round trips, because for quite a long time, people just told us, SELinux broke my system. And then we're like, yeah, okay, logs, reproducer, anything. And now it's much better. People just know where to look. Huh? They are not completely lost anymore, and that is really helpful, because even just a little bit of SELinux knowledge already helps a lot with that. And we see fewer horrible hacks, because especially in the beginning, people try to get something going. Then they notice that SELinux is breaking their attempt for a certain workflow, and then they become very creative. And when we got involved, this was already quite a Frankenstein solution, which we then had to tell the people, please just don't do that. We gave a couple of training sessions, which probably helped. So we have two trainings by now. We have this beginner training, which is a basic introductionary training into SELinux. And then there's an intermediary training where people also get taught how do you debug various SELinux problems. Because there are easy problems that most people will be able to solve rather quickly, and then there's a bit more tricky topics, and the intermediary training should teach you how to deal with the tricky topics, or trickier topics. But in general, most people just learn on their own. I think this is one of the big advantages that we have within SUSE. People can just do this, and yeah, by now, the knowledge increased quite a lot. If you run OpenSUSE Tumbleweed, and everything that's based on that, SLE Micro or ALP, SLFO, random name, then your SELinux behavior should be pretty decent. So mostly you should not notice it. Of course, if I say that now, then you will definitely see some breakage. But at least in theory, most of the time it should be transparent to you unless you start to do more strange things that are out of the ordinary. We talked yesterday about what we don't want to do with Tumbleweed, because for the moment, AppArmor is still the default mandatory access control system, and we probably want to change that going forward, so that at least new Tumbleweed installations will use SELinux by default. But this is something that we still need to discuss when and if we want to do that. And of course, it depends on you having at least some basic SELinux knowledge. And the most important part here really is the capital Z command line flag that either shows you information about SELinux or it causes commands to do the right thing. So if you use PS to list your system, your processes, then a capital Z will show you the security context, and that will then tell you if your system properly is running. Same for listing files, then you will just see the security context of the files that you're currently looking at. So if you remember one thing, let it be the capital Z, please. In general, also bug triage works mostly fine. So we have the rather big advantage that people almost always put SELinux into the title. So we just search for that daily and then go over the bugs. We analyze them, prioritize them, and then distribute them in a group. For most of the usual problems that we see, we have a quick fix in a reasonable amount of time. So because of the JIT workflow, where everything by now is rather streamlined and also enough capacity on our side, you don't really have to wait that long for the usual problems. The feature work itself is mostly done by the kernel or by the future technologies team. So the kernel team, of course, takes care of the infrastructure within the kernel that is needed for that. And the future technologies team are the people that then make use of all of these technologies. And since they are the ones that experiment quite a bit, they are also the ones that run into problems with SELinux way earlier than everyone else. So that's the reason why we then have to work with them to figure out how to solve their problems. What are the challenges? So most of the remaining issues that we've seen until now are not directly in our control. So we see a massive lack of knowledge with some users. That is not really surprising, because if someone was a SUSE, open SUSE only guy, then those people probably never used SELinux. And SA Linux is not something that you learn in 5 minutes. It's a different way of thinking. You need to experience it a bit. It is definitely something that you can learn, but you need to spend a bit of time on this. And if you have zero clue, then sooner or later you will run into a problem that you can't really solve with your normal Unix skills, because you just lack the knowledge. Then there's this fancy tool called audit2allow. It takes the SA Linux denial messages, and it then gives you the rules that you need to prevent these denials in the future. And it's a very cool tool, but unfortunately there are people that misuse it. So I've seen people that actually go over the audit log, grab for the denials, and then just pipe it into audit2allow and generate new modules and load them automatically, and they do that every minute or so. I mean, yeah, that will cause your system to not spit out any denials after a while, but it is also a really, really bad idea, because SA Linux is a security tool, and it's usually not a good way to deal with your security tool in that way. Another thing that bites a lot of people is SA Linux also does container confinement, which is a really good idea, because containers don't contain. Mostly they are not a security barrier. If you want to make them a security barrier, then you have to work for that. And SA Linux is one of the steps. And usual containers are well confined, but then again, there are privileged containers. And for certain workloads, you need them. There's no alternative to them. And if you run a privileged container, then you will get into SPCT. That's a bit of an unfortunately named type. That stands for a super privileged container. Someone decided that this was a great name. And these containers are not all powerful. So you can't do everything from a privileged container to manipulate your host system. And that is very surprising to most people, because if they want to do systems management, then they run a privileged container and assume, well, now I should be able to do anything on the host. And SA Linux will definitely prevent it. You can work around that by running the container workload as unconfined, but this is just something that for most people comes unexpected. And then we have the rather SUSE-specific problem that Rancher, this container management platform, they have SA Linux profiles, and they really tightly integrate into the container SA Linux policy module. So they use private types, they don't use the proper abstractions, which means that if we update container SA Linux, every second time we break their module. Not really our problem, because they need to fix their policy, but yeah, still, of course, ends up with us. And then, as always, the less something is used, the more often it breaks, or at least has the potential to break. And if you do everything that I do on your system, then you're probably good with SA Linux. But if you do something out of the ordinary, then there's a certain chance of breakage. As with pretty much everything else in software, it's just that SA Linux is constructed to confine your workloads. And as soon as you do something really strange, then the chance of breakage increases. And also, we have a couple of people that handle the SA Linux bugs, and mostly that works, but testing usually comes in batches. And that means that we get peaks, and during these peaks, it's then really tricky for us to actually make sure that the bugs are solved in a timely fashion. It's also a bit stressful on us, because if you get this huge list of bugs, then it's rather tricky to see how long it will actually take for that, because sometimes you can fix an SA Linux bug in an hour, sometimes it takes a week. Then there are some challenges that we in SUSE and OpenSUSE see specifically because of the way how we build our products. And our main challenge here is our usage of Butterfs. So you all know that we use Butterfs in our transactional systems to enable this nifty feature of being able to apply updates during the running system, and then them only becoming active during the next reboot. But that does not work for SA Linux in the same way, because usually when you install a new policy, you would directly reload the SA Linux policy. But if you're in this transactional environment, you would do that, you would also affect the outside system. As Linux is not namespaced, you can't really say, well, this is the host system and this is the transactional update that you're currently operating in. So that is tricky. Then also, we use OverlayFS in these transactional systems. So when you install updates, when you go to a new snapshot, you need to make sure that changes that are written to etc, for example, are also available after the next reboot. And for that, we use OverlayFS to capture everything that happens in etc. And unfortunately, OverlayFS has some pretty complex access rules when it comes to SE Linux. And that never really was much of a problem until kernel T became confined. Because suddenly these access control rules became active for us. And that is quite tricky. Don't know if Ignaz is here today, but apparently maybe we will be moving away from OverlayFS. Yeah, looks positive. Great. Love to see that. But overall, there were fewer problems than I expected. So for a while, I thought about maybe changing companies. But I think it worked out fine. So what do you expect in the future? In general, you will see more SE Linux denials. That is just something that's going to happen. If you are a normal user, or if you use OpenSUSE for your grandparents or whatever, this is not going to be a major problem for you, because this will only happen in use cases where you do something special. But everyone here in the room, pretty much by definition, is someone that will run into this, because you do something special. In general, we also want to work more closely with our upstream, so Fedora. There's definitely room for improvement, so we have a couple of patches that still need to be upstreamed. But there's also the idea of maybe having this not be called the Fedora policy anymore, but maybe having something like a reference policy 2 or something like that. Let's see if this is something that we can do. We also need to improve our collaboration with Rancher to make sure that they don't go that deeply into our policy modules. Not quite yet clear how we do that. And then there's a specific kernel change. If we stick with this OverlayFS setup, then it will make our life easier when it comes to these access control decisions. But as I just saw that Ignaz apparently is still working on getting rid of OverlayFS, I mean, this would, of course, be our preferred solution, because it's just so painful with SE Linux. And then we want to add additional training offers, repeat the existing ones, but also offer some advanced training sessions. So I mentioned already we have this beginner training and the intermediary training. There is definitely also, from time to time, a request to have a training that specifically teaches you how to build an SE Linux policy module. And that is more difficult than it is for Obama. So assume a couple of the people here in the room already built some Obama profiles. Most of the time, you can do that after an hour or two that someone showed you Obama. But if you do that with SE Linux, you will also get an SE Linux profile, but it's very likely pretty bad. So it is a skill that needs to be taught. And the documentation, unfortunately, is not great. We try to help with that a bit. So we now have improved documentation. It's in the OpenSUSE wiki. Definitely also something that we want to improve over time to give people something that they can use to learn on their own. That reduces the workload for us, but also just makes it easier for people, because you don't have to get in touch with people all the time. You can learn on your own. Then we need to improve the packaging. So especially on transactional systems, currently we have the SE Linux policy stored here. That requires a special hack to allow this to work, because that is not something that you should do in a transactional system. The Python packaging in general, we offer some Python bindings for the SE Linux toolchain, and that has been rather painful to change that to the new way of packaging Python. By now we improved on that already. I think that likely in the next couple of months we should be able to get rid of all of the old cruft. And then we want to have a CI/CD pipeline. So commit something to JIT and get as a Linux policy out of somewhere that you can directly test. So the current way of working is not that much effort, but that would then also allow us to maybe hook into tests or something like that. And then, of course, we need to think about a migration path from AppArmor-based systems to SELinux. The easy case is someone just runs the default AppArmor profiles, because then we can reasonably go to an SELinux confinement without breakage. It gets more tricky if someone has custom AppArmor profiles, or if people have unusual configurations. This is something that we just need to figure out over time. Unfortunately, there's no generic way of saying you have a complex AppArmor setup and then you can transfer that into an SELinux system. The systems are just not comparable, and there is no automated way of going from one to the other. These are ways on how to contact us. So this is unfortunately only available internally, but that mailing list should be available externally too. So if you want to reach us, just drop us a mail there. At the moment, we use that mostly for this bug queue monitoring. There's not much discussion on there, but we would be happy if there's the need in the community to reach out to people and try to discuss what we do. Okay, and with that, thank you much for your attention, and do we have any questions? That's perfect, because then I
have a question, sorry. You mentioned about the massive knowledge gap of the users. Is there any plan to include the GUI SELinux management app that Fedora has or had to make the process easier?
Yeah. This is actually packaged, and at the moment we don't use it as much. I think we probably need to improve on that and make sure that this is packaged, because at least for certain simple problems, that thing is actually helpful. It's just that I have been a bit skeptical about the whole thing, because it then pipes your denials into order to allow in a very convenient way, which can be helpful. But it also allows people to really easily do stupid things.
I'm not sure we're talking about the same. Is this the one that when you have a violation, there's a pop-up, SELinux was violated, deny, allow.
Yep.
Oh, good.
And I mean, this can be very helpful, but if you give a user an easy way to get around a security measure, then they very quickly will learn, if I click yes, everything works and I'm happy. And if I click no, things break and I'm not happy. And it's also not reasonable that they understand what they see there. And one of the big advantages of a system like AppArmor and SELinux is that you have access control in the hands of people that understand what access control means. But then again, I know that it's convenient and also quite helpful for a lot of people.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Okay, then thanks again, and I can finally have a coffee.